This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last summer's combination of bad weather, overbooking, crowded schedules, and antiquated traffic control left many air passengers stranded in airports or too often on the tarmac. Now the airline industry and travelers face another daunting summer, which could be just as bad or worse. And with the price of oil rising, it's likely to cost more as well. And higher prices may be something air travelers may have to get used to. Nobody expects the price of oil to come down anytime soon. And the pending merger between Northwest and Delta could be the first in a series of consolidations that could mark the end of the low-fare era. We'll talk about what happened and why this might mean, what this might mean for those of us still hoping to catch a deal. Later on in the hour, Time magazine's global warming cover is on the opinion page this week. Some veterans of Iwo Jima call the magazine's use of the famous flag-raising photograph disgraceful. But first, sorting out changes in the airline industry. If you have questions about what's happening or if you work in the industry and you're feeling the ripple effects, join us. Tell us your story. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now is Michelle Higgins. She writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times, and she's with us from our bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks for having me.
And are deals and low fares more scarce as you look ahead this summer than they were a year ago?
Well, what's been happening is because of the high fuel cost, airlines have been kind of pumping up the fees that they charge passengers. Just today, some airlines were announcing higher prices for change fees when you have to change your ticket, for instance. So you're getting dinged for everything from changing your flight to possibly picking an aisle seat on the plane.
Mm-hmm. And or if you'd like to actually cross your legs on the plane, of course, that'll cost you more, too.
That's the direction we seem to be going.
Yeah. And they're not charging for pillows yet, are they?
No, they've pretty much just been eliminated from the flights.
Okay. Well, I guess that's small comfort. as we all plan for summer travel ahead, what are the things we should bear in mind to make the trip a little bit more bearable?
Well, when possible, book a nonstop flight. The potential for delays increases every time your plane touches the ground, so it behooves you to look for flights, if you can, that are direct or nonstop. You can also try booking morning flights, which are delayed less often than those in the afternoon, because passengers who take an airport's first flight of the day, sometimes which are called originators, are least likely to experience delays. On the flight data side, you might check flightstats.com. It lets you compare the timeliness record for particular flights. You can just plug in your route and click on the flight rating. It'll tell you how often it's delayed.
Mm-hmm. And these are all for people, you know, booking some time ahead. After last summer's debacle in some respects, at least to some people in New York were so outraged that they actually passed a law saying you have rights as an airline passenger. If you get stuck on the tarmac in a plane for X numbers of hours, they need to do X, A, B, and C for you in return. I guess that law didn't last very long.
Unfortunately, it got tossed out. Yes, the court decided that it was up to the federal courts to decide whether or not passengers should have some rights that way versus each state making their own rules about it. There are a few things that you can keep in mind in terms of your rights when you're a passenger. Airlines are required to compensate passengers who are involuntarily bumped when a flight is oversold, depending on the price of the ticket and the length of the delay. For example, if the airline arranges a substitute transportation that's scheduled to arrive at your destination between 1 and 2 hours after your arrival, it must pay you an amount equal to your one-way fare to your final destination with a maximum of $800. And in fact, the DOT, the Department of Transportation, recently doubled that limit so that now passengers get a little bit more money if they're involuntarily bumped.
And some of the best deals available are when they do overbook, you do have a seat, and they offer those, a free round-trip ticket to anywhere plus a meal voucher, a night in a hotel, and we'll get you on the next flight.
That's right.
Yeah. Stay with us, Michelle, if you would. Joining us now is Dean Faust, who's the chief of the Atlanta Bureau for Business Week magazine, and he joins us today from the studios of Dallas Audio Post Studios. And nice of you to be with us. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, my pleasure, Neil.
And you've written a piece suggesting that the merger, the Delta Northwest merger, this presages the end of the low fare era. That the kind of deals, even those available this summer, are not going to be around for very long.
I think so. I think if you go back to The truth is the American public has enjoyed pretty much a free ride, or close to it, in the 30 years since the airline industry was deregulated in 1978. If you look at it if you factor in inflation, airfares have declined more than 50% in real dollars over the past 30 years. I would ask you to guess what the average one-way ticket in this country is today.
I read your piece. It's not fair, so I know it's about $280.
Okay. $140 for the average one-way ticket, or $280 for the average round-trip ticket. That explains why airlines are on pace this year to lose $9 billion. And the bottom line is, for the past 30 years, air travel, which once was the province of the wealthy, has become the great proletariat pastime. The truth is, in many other countries in the nation, flying is still the province of the wealthy or the upper middle class or middle class. And flying got so cheap in the past three decades, it basically drove the bus companies out of business. I think that when they shook hands on the deal last week, that marked the turning point. That's going to change.
Well, one quick item, though. Shaking hands on the deal, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go ahead.
I think the deal is going to go ahead. Look, the dogs are going to bark in Congress, but the sled is going to move on. The truth is, Congress doesn't actually have a whole lot of power to stop the deal. I think it's likely that the Justice Department will approve this deal. The only question is whether they get the approval before the end of the Bush administration and the next administration takes over, because the risk there is that an Obama or a Clinton administration could be a lot less friendly.
But the unions have yet to agree to it, too.
The unions, I think, will just try to extract the best deal they can. I think they'll try to get some kind of a give back on all those pay cuts and concessions they made over the past 5 years. I think in the end they're going to go along.
And we heard a clip of tape from the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, James Oberstar of Minnesota, saying when that does go ahead, it's going to cause a domino effect, a lot of mergers. He says there's only going to be three global carriers.
That's quite possible. I think next up, because the other carriers are going to look at the combined Delta Northwest and say, I've got to match the service capabilities that they now can offer customers. You're going to see, I think most likely, you're going to see United merge with Continental. What American does, I'm not sure. American may try to squeeze in there and either cut its own deal with United or Continental, or perhaps go after U.S. Airways. And I think in time you're going to see the discount carriers start to think about partnering up. Maybe a Southwest at some point goes after AirTran and partners up. And that's all going to presage a great international wave of mergers, probably maybe 10 years out. And I think in time you're going to see a merger between an Air France and a Delta Northwest and so on.
But as I understand it, it costs. I think the projected cost of the Northwest and Delta merger is something like $1 billion. If it's going to cost them $1 billion to merge, they've got to make up that money somewhere.
They are going to make up that money. They're going to retire a lot of inefficient planes. They're going to cut routes. This is actually a time in the airline history where they can actually make more money by reducing flights. Right now, the average airline loses $30 on every passenger they fly. So I think what they'll do is they'll look in some smaller markets and they'll say, oh, Delta flies two flights from Atlanta to Charleston. Northwest flies one. We're going to cut out that third flight. We're going to squeeze everybody onto those two remaining flights and raise fares $75.
Let's get some listeners involved in this conversation. Our guests are Dean Faust, the Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week magazine, and Michelle Higgins, who writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times. Let's start with Mark, and Mark's calling us from Minneapolis.
Hi, Dean. Thank you for having me.
Go ahead, please. Oh.
I have an uncle who works for Delta, and we've been talking about the merger recently, and I'm assuming it's going to happen, but it's also going to cost a lot of money. So my question for you is, when is the cost going to go down? Like, is in the foreseeable future, is it going to happen?
Is the cost of air travel going to go down?
Right. The merger is going to cause a bunch of other mergers, like you were saying, presumably, which is going to increase costs. So when is the cost going to go down for a lower middle class person like myself?
The cost is not going to go down. The cost of travel is only going to go up from here.
I see. So we should look toward other modes of transportation then.
I think the bus companies and the Amtrak and all the other forms of transportation are feeling a little bit better today about their business.
Oh, and if you think you've got bad service on the airlines, try riding the Grey Dog. Michelle Higgins, do you agree that the airfares are going nowhere but up?
Well, I think that with all the fees that we're seeing being tacked on, they're already, you know, kind of pushing themselves up now. You know, there are a couple things that consumers can do to try to get the best fares that are out there by looking for cheap flights. You can sign up for fare alerts, for instance, which offer a heads up when airfares drop. Expedia and Orbitz have automated versions of these. You can also sign up for email alerts from deal aggregators like TravelZoo.com or AirfareWatchdog.com that tells you about all sorts of deals from your home city.
Excellent. Well, I think you definitely answered my question.
All right, Mark. Thanks very much for the phone call.
You guys have a great day.
Bye-bye. Is Mark right? I mean, a lot of businesses also rely on air travel, the kind of fares that the last 25 years made possible, Dean Faust, and their prices are going to have to go up too.
Their prices are going to go up, and they're not happy about these mergers. The business groups have already made it known that this is not a development that they're very happy about. They, too, may try to fight it, but I don't know if they're going to have any clout.
Stay with us if you would. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. You can send us email, talk@npr.org. And there's a conversation underway about this story on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll be back with more. Dean Faust is our guest. He's the Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week magazine. Also with us, Michelle Higgins, who writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times. And don't forget, coming up on the opinion page later this hour, the brouhaha over Time Magazine's cover that featured the Marines planting the flag on Iwo Jima, except it's not a flag, it's a tree. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The airlines are coping with soaring fuel prices and a limp economy, which means the end of free peanuts and possibly of cheap flights for everybody. Our guests are Dean Faust, Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week, as well as Michelle Higgins, who writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times. If you've been stranded or frustrated lately, if you work in the industry and you're feeling the ripple effects, call. Tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's begin with Chuck. And Chuck is with us from Jackson, California.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm a 30-year employee with what will no longer be the world's largest airline. And my comment's pretty direct. Are we still here?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. My comment is simple. We have the finest airline industry that the free market is going to give us. This is the direct result of deregulation and 30 years of free market competition. And as I tell my passengers when they're complaining about the service, I ask them, did you search by fare or did you search by service? Inevitably, of course, they've always searched by fare. And this is what you get.
Dean Faust, does he have a point?
He has a point. Passengers have, for the past 30 years, wanted to have it both ways. They don't want to pay more than $100 for a ticket, and yet they still moan that they didn't get their peanuts and they didn't get their that warm meal that we all got back in the late 80s, and that maybe the tarmac was backed up.
And
they missed
To be fair, we complained about the food back then too. So
that's right. And let's not forget about the negative impact upon all the airline industry employees, all the hundreds of thousands of employees who lost their pensions entirely, and the declining wage and work conditions for airline employees. So it's been a fairly negative experience to be deregulated for 30 years. I can tell you.
The truth is, I flew from Atlanta to Dallas this morning. I'll go back tonight. My round trip fare, which I booked on Friday. was $215. Do you think I could drive from Atlanta to Dallas and back with gas at $3.50 a gallon that day, right now?
Of course not.
Chuck, thanks for the call and good luck.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, Dean Faust, is re-regulation of any sort in the cards?
I don't think so. There may be some small forms of regulation, but it's a question of be careful what you wish for, because if we did go back to regulation, let's think about air travel back in the 1970s. The fares were a lot higher, fewer airlines, fewer flights to fewer cities. So I'm not sure that that would be in the best interest of the passengers. And if you want to regulate fares, that's basically asking the airlines to continue losing $9 billion a year.
Here's an email we have from Mike. Lately, flights are canceled due to different reasons and passengers are left on their own. What can victims do about their non-refundable hotel and car and scheduled activities? Can they file a claim or sue the airline for loss of money? And I guess, Michelle Higgins, that one's to you.
Sure. Well, passengers are entitled to certain rights. They're entitled to a refund by law, for instance, even for a non-refundable ticket if they decide to cancel a trip because their flight cancellation or a significant non-weather related change, like a delay of more than a day or a change from nonstop service to a flight with a stop. But, you know, with airlines packed to near capacity these days, good luck finding an open seat on another flight for your family. So passengers are really, when things go awry, you know, left to fend for themselves. One thing, we're speaking about the regulated air. In the regulated air, most airlines agreed to transfer a traveler of a canceled flight to another airline, provided it could get the traveler to his or her destination sooner. And this became known as the Rule 240 transfer. Today, airlines spell out their customer service commitments in a contract of carriage, which you can find on every airline's website. And a few carriers will transfer a passenger of a canceled flight to another airline if they don't come up with an alternative. But others are less explicit. That Rule 240 is kind of going away.
Here's an email from Bill in Aurora, California, and he wants to know some definitions. Many years ago, he says the airlines were regulated. What did that mean exactly, and could going back to that system with the problems the airlines are currently experiencing help out? I think, Dean Faust, you've answered the first part. What was regulation specifically?
Regulation was requiring the airlines to file for approval to fly certain routes, any routes they wanted to fly, and then to for the government to help set the price. And I think as much as we want to moan about the current state of air travel, we're getting what we pay for. And I think if we want to go back to the 1970s, you're talking about, again, fewer airlines, higher fares. In real terms, you'd probably be talking about fares easily more than doubling. We have to be careful what we want to wish for.
Let's talk with Willard. Willard's calling us from Hector in Minnesota.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to make a comment about the proposed merger between Delta and Northwest. In the paper recently, it showed the amount of income for various airlines. Delta had an income of something like $19 billion. Northwest had $12.7 billion. The irony of it is Northwest made as much money, much profit, on less income than what made the same income or profit with less income. So I don't understand the wisdom of Northwest going with Delta when they're merging with a less profitable airline.
Dean Faust, has he got the economics right?
The economics he's talking about, those are actually the numbers, $12 billion and $19 billion. Those are revenues, which is another
That's
word
correct.
For
That's
sales.
Income. But then you look at profit margin.
Hold on, Hector.
Income is what you have at the end of the day left over. For corporations and for you and I, when we put the change on our counter in the morning, the truth is the airline industry has lost nearly $30 billion just since 2001 alone. In fact, the airline industry, if you go back to the first commercial flight by the predecessor of United Airlines back in the 1930s, the airlines have lost billions of dollars. In that sweep of 80 years, they're in the red. They have lost money. Warren Buffett famously once said that someone would have done Wall Street and investors a favor if they had shot down the Wright brothers.
Okay. Willard, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go now to Elliot. Elliot's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, yeah, just my thought is growing up on the East Coast in the Philadelphia area, all these mass transit independent companies had emerged to survive back in the 60s and 70s. SEPTA, I grew up with SEPTA in Philadelphia, and I don't see why it would be a difficult or a bad thing for airlines as the modern equivalent of mass transit to merge and save everybody money.
Michelle Higgins, from your point of view, would mergers be a good thing or a bad thing for travelers?
Well, airline mergers have never really worked out in favor of passengers. If you look kind of back, mergers usually resulted in reduced flights and higher fares as the airlines consolidate, and at least in the early stages, poor service as airlines try to meld their massive computer systems and flight schedules and baggage systems. You know, after US Air kind of merged with America West, one of the most recent big mergers we've seen, they moved to a single reservation system, and customers found some itineraries had been lost, and computer troubles led to these long lines at airports and widespread flight delays and major disruptions. So, you know, it's something that if you look back in terms of history, airline mergers haven't been a great deal for passengers.
Mm-hmm. And Dean Faust, if there are fewer carriers, they will then have not to compete with these smaller carriers, and therefore they can afford to raise rates.
They can afford to raise rates. And I agree with Michelle on one level that mergers have never worked out in favor of the passengers. But on the other hand, there has to be a limit, not to be a lapdog for the industry with this comment. But at some point, the airlines have to make at least a little profit. We can't expect them to keep losing $9 billion a year. Because at some point, while some of the major carriers have in recent years used bankruptcy to basically get their house back in order and get their costs back in control, at some point, if they go into bankruptcy again, they're not going to come back. There were three airline bankruptcies within the past couple of months, including Aloha and Spirit. And when they filed bankruptcy, no one was willing to help provide them financing to return. So they just simply sold off all their planes and liquidated and turned the lights off. And that could be a risk at some point going forward. AirTran is now seeing American Express, when people charge their tickets on American Express is keeping a big chunk of that rather than passing it on to AirTran as they should, because they're scared that people aren't going to pay their credit cards. And that's causing a pinch for AirTran right now.
Isn't poor service better than no service?
Very good point.
Thanks, Elliot. Here's an email from Don in Colorado. Your statement about this is about my statement about travel by bus was far off base. He writes, they have typically clean, comfortable coaches, leave and arrive on time. They also arrive and depart from downtown in most cases. I was talking specifically about Greyhound, and I guess I don't ride the same buses that Don does. Anyway, this from Mary Rose in Chicago. How do the little European airlines manage to charge so little for their domestic flights? Why don't small airlines arise in the U.S. that can work on the similar principle? And I guess Dean Faust is talking about places like Ryanair.
Ryanair, and there actually is a U.S. equivalent called Allegiant, which is based out of Las Vegas, and the Ryan family of Ireland actually owns a stake in Allegiant and helped get its start. I think that we are always going to see the discounters. And, you know, I talked about deregulation a minute ago and whether it was good for the industry to – whether we would be good having regulation. Well, if we had never had deregulation, Southwest and AirTran and Allegiant and Ryanair in Europe may have never come to exist. So I think deregulation is good, and I think that you're always going to see these discounters – form up because there's just something romantic about starting an airline.
Let's go to Nathan. Nathan with us from Monterey in California.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment about how the rising prices in airline tickets are affecting other businesses. I work for a company with a large national sales force, and typically once a year they'll fly us out, the whole national sales force out to a central location for a big meeting. This year, we all met locally with our local teams, and we dialed in via web conference instead of meeting in a national location. And I can't help but think that had something to do with the cost of flying us all out.
Hmm. Interesting. Dean Faust, in your piece in Business Week, you speculated that, in fact, the number of airline travelers is likely to be reduced by tens of millions.
I talked to a consultant who most recently had been an economist for the FAA, and he ran some calculations and estimates that for airlines to earn their cost of capital, which is a fancy economic word for make a little profit, they would have to raise that average $280 round-trip ticket to about $340, and also they would have to reduce the number of seats, which is a fancy way of parking more planes on the runways or out in the desert, by about 20% as well. And the net effect of that is that's going to price a lot of middle class and lower class flyers out. He estimates right now there are about 300 million Americans who fly every year, and he estimates that that could go down by to about 240 million.
And if that happened, wouldn't that presumably reduce the pressure to keep increasing the size of airports and to reduce the pressure to incorporate that new GPS-based air traffic control system, too?
It may decrease the pressure to build the fancy airports, but I'm going to argue we still need that GPS system.
All right. Nathan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're speaking with Dean Faust of Business Week and Michelle Higgins of The New York Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go to Greg. Greg's with us from Burlington, Kentucky.
Hello.
Greg, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
I worked for Delta Airlines for almost 20 years, and I'm an aircraft mechanic. I've also been involved in union organizing, so a little different perspective on things. I see this merger being a way for Delta to more monopolize the airline travel. And I think, I don't think ticket prices are going to go up significantly. Fuel costs and salaries are the two highest cost factors that the airlines have. I don't see fuel costs coming down, so I think it's, I think as far as the airline's perspective on things, I think it's incumbent that they lower salaries significantly. And Delta is currently at technicians and aircraft inspectors working overseas, actually training people in Indonesia and inspecting aircraft that are being overhauled in Hong Kong and other places.
As an effort to reduce costs.
Exactly.
Greg, though, you seem to speak of this as a fait accompli. You, too, as a union organizer yourself, think this is going to go ahead?
I think the merger will go ahead. I don't think there's any way around that. But I think that airline workers and workers in the United States in general really need to take more of a proactive role in assuring that they get cost of living adjustments and raises to compensate for what they've lost. I mean, most of us have lost most of our retirements in that, and an awful lot of people are looking at getting that out of this industry, especially aircraft mechanics. We're seeing a lot of things that are questionable. So, a lot of guys are getting out of it.
Greg, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can squeeze in one last caller, John. John calling us from Athens, Ohio.
Yes. You basically answered most of my questions, but I'll cut to the chase. Why don't the major airlines or airlines, period, just come to the conclusion, if we're not going to make a profit, what are we doing? Why are we in this business? Because this has been this way almost for the whole history of the industry. So why don't they just say, hey, let's just do it on our own, put the prices where they need to be so we can make a profit? Because what your commentator or your gentleman there said earlier about the customers getting what they paid for, well, they're actually getting a lot more than what they paid for, because if they had to pay for what they were getting, their ticket prices would be a lot higher, actually.
Mm-hmm. And Dean Faust, isn't these reduced fares are the unprofitable fares, if you will. Right. They're the result of competitive pressure, no?
They are. They're the result of the entrance of players like Southwest and Allegiant and AirTran. And when we talk about fares going up, they're not going to go up across the board. I will probably still be able to pay that $215 between Dallas and Atlanta, because those are two major airlines have major hubs. where you're going to feel the pain and see the pain is the smaller markets where airlines have monopolies. So it'll be the routes like Atlanta to Charleston or Atlanta to Jackson, Mississippi. Pick your markets in the country. Those will be the losers. Those will be the routes where maybe the two airlines that merge have three flights. They'll cut that to two. They may cut it to one. And everyone is on those routes are going to pay more.
Dean Faust, thanks for your time as always.
My pleasure.
Dean Faust, the Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week magazine, and Michelle Higgins, we appreciated the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you.
Michelle Higgins writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times, and she joined us from our bureau in New York.